Hi, and welcome to another edition of Inside Windows Phone. I'm Larry Lieberman. With me today, we've got Jaime Rodriguez, who you know, of course, as well as the infamous Peter Tor.
We also know
Peter Tor. Peter Tor has been around for a long time. Very, very important person here at Windows Phone. Today, we're going to talk a little bit about multitasking, a new feature in Windows Phone Mango. We're very excited about it. Peter, what are the different kinds of multitasking available to developers?
So in Windows Phone Mango, we introduced a whole different set of multitasking features. The first one that appeals to a lot of users is fast application switching. So the ability to go from one application to another without seeing that annoying resuming screen in between.
That's great.
Yeah. The second type of thing we've added is alarms and reminders. So an application like a to-do application or a sports application can remind you, hey, turn on the TV to watch the big game, or your item is due now, please go check it off.
Just like calendar and alarm work?
Just like calendar and alarm, yes. A third one we'd allow is background file transfers. So an application that needs to download, say, a lot of video in the background, or an application that, say, takes photos and wants to upload them to a web service, even if you quit the app, we now support that in Windows Phone Mango.
That's too great.
And then the biggest thing we have is what we call background agents, and they let code run in the background to do various things. There's basically three kinds of background agents. The first one is background audio, which lets you play audio in the background, which everybody has been waiting for in Windows Phone. The other two are different types of kind of general purpose background processing. Being able to run code approximately every half an hour to do random things that you want to do, and then code that runs kind of overnight when you're asleep and your phone is plugged in and it's on a Wi-Fi network, it can do a whole bunch of work to, you know, cache data for the next day or synchronize data with a web with a cloud service and stuff like that.
Sure. Before we dig into that, though, why aren't we just letting any process run in the background?
Good question. So if you let random processes run in the background, it does a couple of bad things to the phone. The first thing is it drains the battery, right? And we saw this with the old Windows Mobile, is that if you let people, even if they don't know they're doing work in the background, mm-hmm. They wake up every once in a while, they spin the CPU, they spin up the network, it drains your battery fast, and then users don't like that because at the end of the day, their battery's dead, they can't take calls. The other big thing they do is disrupt the foreground experience. So, you know, you're maybe playing a game on the phone, and then all of a sudden the frame rate drops to a stutter, or a pop-up comes up that you don't want, or these things, sounds play, things that really interfere with the foreground experience. And so we don't just let arbitrary code run in the background because it really does affect the user's experience of the
phone.
It's
really aligned to our prime directive in Windows Phone of making an outstanding end-user experience, isn't it?
Yes, yeah. It's all about the end-user experience.
And to be fair, like, that's actually the point of today. It's like, today what we want to do is dive really deep into agents and get them some of the details that we haven't shared yet. So for context, like, yes, there is three types of background agents. You've done, two videos in Channel 9, talking about at least one or two in Channel 9 and one at Mix, talking about agents. So, if you haven't watched those, we'll definitely have a link to those videos here. We don't want to rehash all of that. I think what we want to do is kind of get deeper into, hey, here's some of the areas that you should be aware of, some of the more intricate details, the really insider stuff that's not even in the docs yet. Mm-hmm. So does that sound fair?
Sure. Sounds good.
I gave you a heads up earlier, so you should have all the questions that we had. So let's go back to the three types of agents, right? Mm-hmm. What are they, there's differences around them, like how much CPU they get, how much memory they're allowed to use. Mm-hmm. So let's start with that. Like, how much CPU and memory do we get for, audio agents?
Okay, so for audio agents, they get 15 megabytes of memory, and they are allotted approximately 10% of CPU every 5 seconds. So it's averaged out over time so that you can buffer some audio and then sleep for a while and buffer some audio and sleep for a while. And there's actually two kind of subtypes of audio agents. There's what we call playback agents, which are essentially, you give URLs of tracks in the cloud to Zune, yep. And Zune plays them for you. And then while the track is playing, your agent isn't doing any work, so we actually put it to sleep for a while. There's another kind of audio agent, which we call media stream source, which you're familiar with if you've done streaming audio in Silverlight, and that's more of a you're interactively pulling data from the cloud, decoding it or decrypting it, and handing buffers over to Zune. And those things tend to run continuously while the audio is running. But we guarantee you average of 10% over every 5 seconds. So it might come in a little bit of peaks and troughs, but you do get a pretty smooth amount of CPU.
And those can run, like, as long as I go into my app, I start playing music in the background, I switch to a different task, it'll continue to run.
Yep.
Forever, you know, getting my 10% CPU, my 15 meg RAM.
Yep, and it'll continue to run. That memory is actually reserved for you, so no other application can come in and take that memory. We don't we don't kill you if, say, a game loads and wants to load all that memory, but we keep the audio running. It stops if the user pauses audio for more than about 10 minutes, then we kill it. Obviously, if they start another audio playback app, whether it's the Zoom first-party app or a third-party app, or they, say, play a game and want to turn on music in the game, then we will stop the background audio. But essentially, once it's started, we keep it going.
Okay. The next agent is that periodic, the kind of generic periodic agent, which runs about every half an hour.
Yep.
What does it get?
It runs every half an hour, give or take, and we can talk a bit about scheduling in a minute. It gets 6 megabytes of RAM. Now, if you're used to Silverlight on the desktop, that might sound like not much memory because, you know, Hello World takes quite a bit of RAM. We've done a lot of work in Mango to reduce the memory footprint of Silverlight. Plus, in a background agent, you know, we don't load the UI stack, we don't load a bunch of stuff. So Silverlight itself only takes up about 1.8 to 2 megs. So you've got about 4 megs to play with. And you can do quite a bit in 4 megabytes. So it gets 6 megabytes of RAM, runs approximately every half an hour for 25 seconds. And same kind of thing. We guarantee you a minimum of 10% over that time. But if the phone is idle, you might get more than that.
So you can get a little bit more. And you can have multiple agents run at the same time if the phone's idle.
If the phone is idle, so the screen is off, it's in your pocket, and there's no foreground experience to worry about, we will actually spin up a lot of them at the same time. They're all still guaranteed 10 to 20% of the CPU. And then if you pick the phone out of your pocket and you unlock it, we kill all the extraneous ones so that the foreground experience is still great.
Okay. And the third type of agent, this resource-intensive agent, what's the status there? What did they get?
So resource-intensive agents still only get 6 megabytes of RAM, but their scheduling frequency is different. So for the periodic agents, we run them approximately every half an hour, forever, all the time, as long as the battery is above a certain level, and we'll talk about that. For the resource-intensive agents, they only run if the phone is on AC power and it's connected to a non-cellular network, so say Wi-Fi or desktop pass-through. The battery is above 90% and the phone is idle. So, you know, I said in the intro, it's like when you're asleep. When you're asleep at night, your phone is plugged in, it's doing work for you. Or, you know, potentially you're at work, the phone's plugged in on the desk, it's doing work for you. And again, those ones, if the user unlocks the device, we kill them all, so the foreground experience is still great.
So, Peter, how many of these can be running at one time, though? You know, if I install a lot of apps on my phone and they all have background agents, doesn't that have an impact on the device?
So on a device with more than 384 megs of memory, which is essentially every device that's shipped so far, you have up to 15 agents on the phone.
Okay.
That are potentially running. But again, we only run one at a time if the user's using the phone, so we don't impact the foreground experience. We don't run too many of them in parallel so that they all starve each other. So we don't really impact the foreground that much. If you have a phone with only 384 megs of RAM, of which there aren't any that I know of, it's limited to 9 agents.
And the user can turn them off too, right?
Correct. So there's a couple of ways that agents get turned off. Firstly, in the application UI itself, you know, if the user decides they don't want background anymore, there should be UI in the application to turn off the agent. If they can't find that setting in the application, for example, there is a control panel with shipping that shows all the agents, all the periodic agents on the phone, and lets you turn them on or off. And if you turn them off, you can specify whether the application is allowed to turn them back on again.
Ah.
So if you turn it off in the control panel and you don't check the box that says allow it to turn on again, the app can't turn it on. And so, for example, it's a location-based agent, and every half an hour it's uploading your location to some web service. But you don't want people to know where you are because you're doing something secret. You can turn it off. You know, you're shopping for your engagement ring for your wife-to-be, right? You turn it off in the control panel, and then even if you launch the foreground app, it can't start the agent again.
So, and this is a common question, so let's drive through it just to make sure. If I write an agent, so there is a flag that I can use to check whether I'm enabled or not from within my app, right?
Yes.
So there's a flag that I, as an application developer, should always check.
Yes.
And then should I just prompt or should I try to enable the background agent, you know, programmatically?
Well, the pattern that we're suggesting to people is as long as the user has indicated in your app that they want the functionality of the agent, then you should always try and schedule it. So whenever the foreground app starts, you should try and schedule the agent again. If it fails, it will fail because either there's too many other agents on the system already,
yep,
or because it's been disabled in the control panel.
Yep.
And in both of those cases, there's nothing that the application can do. Right? The user has to go to the control panel and either check the box that says let the agent run again, or they have to disable one of the other agents on the phone.
Yep.
And so the failure case is the same in both cases, which is essentially let the user know that they need to go to the control panel to figure things out.
Yep.
The reason why you want to schedule it every time the app starts is because we put a 14-day limit on how long agents can run for automatically. So I said they run forever every half an hour, as long as the battery's above a certain level. That's only true for 2 weeks at a time. The reason for that is, let's say you go to Marketplace, you download an app, and you turn on all the features because you want to see how cool it is, and then you forget about the app.
Right.
Right. You never run that app again. It's just sitting in your app list somewhere.
It's pretty common. We've shown a lot of charts of what we call app decay, where people install a large number of apps, and then over a period of time, fewer and fewer of them get used.
Exactly, yeah. So that those app decaying ones don't use up your 15 slots for the apps that you are downloading new ones.
Right, but you have to start the app itself the first time for the agent to run.
Yeah.
So some people may not be aware that, if you download an app and really the only point of the app is the background functionality, there's probably a couple scenarios like that. Tile driven by the background agent is one. You still have to run that app the first time.
To kick off the agent,
yeah.
And then after 14 days, if you haven't run the app, it'll turn off as well.
Sure.
So what we're recommending people do there is, on the live tile, after, say, 10 days or so, you can actually put a little glyph on the tile that says, you need to click me to keep going.
Let me ask you about that really quick, though, because this is a scenario I want to make sure people are aware of. You no longer have to write a server application to drive a live tile.
Yes, that's correct.
So can you tell us a little bit about how that
works? Sure. So in Mango, we're also introducing several new features around live tiles. The first one is, as Larry says, API-driven tile updates. So you don't need a push service anymore. From your application, from your foreground application, or from your background agent, you can update your tile. The second thing we're doing is we're adding back-of-tile support. So traditionally, you had the front of the tile, and you could put an image, you could put some text and a count. But in Mango, the tiles can actually flip around. So on the back, you can have a separate image and separate text. So you can have, say, your applications icon on the front. And when it flips over, you can show the most recent information that you want to let the user know.
That's cool.
About.
But so I can update that tile totally from the background agent.
Yep. And then the third thing is, the third cool thing with tiles is more than one tile.
So right.
In Windows Phone 7 with, say, the People Hub or the Maps application or Zune, you could not only have the main tile, but you could pin contacts from People or albums from Zune or locations from the map. Third-party apps can do that now as well. So you can actually have more than one tile updated from the cloud through push or from APIs on the device.
That's fantastic. Yep.
And to continue on that trend, then let's get into the details between a background agent and tiles are kind of like these. First of all, you cannot pin your application from the background agent.
Correct. Right? So we think of the start menu as being it's kind of a protected UI, right? We don't want people to spam it with random junk. So the user is in control of what's in the start menu. So within the foreground application, take contacts, for example, a built-in application. You look into contact card, you click the pin to start button. We actually navigate the application away. We bring the start menu to the foreground, and we scroll down. We say, here's your new tile.
Yep.
So if the user accidentally pinned it, they can immediately delete it. We do exactly the same thing for third-party applications. So if the application pins a tile to start, the application goes away. Here's the start menu. You can immediately delete it if you didn't want to do that. Now, in the background, you can update that tile.
Yep.
And you can delete it in certain circumstances. Using contacts as another example, say I'd pinned you to my start menu as a secondary tile, and then let's say you were no longer my friend, right? And so you were deleted out of my contact list. The next time the agent ran, it would say, well, there's a tile for Hamey, but there's no data backing Hamey anymore.
Yep.
I'll delete that tile.
Yep. So the one, I mean, you can update any tile, so that's really cool.
You just cannot pin it,
but that's, or you can update the tile for your app. You just cannot pin it. The other thing that people ask a lot, which this one's kind of surprising to people, is a common pattern for us is I use writable bitmap to kind of generate a dynamic tile or something like that.
Make a very pretty update tile.
And in background agent, you're not supposed to run UI. But you can actually do it where you use the UI element, create a little bit of UI, and then do a writable bitmap and set that as your, you know, the background for your tile, or set as, you know, set it. So you can actually do a little bit of what I would call UI related work without showing UI.
Yeah. So you can use the Silverlight UI framework to generate the tile images.
Yep.
We can go into some of the recommendations there as well if you like. But you can't show any UI on the screen. Right, and you don't get a page, you don't get navigations, you can create, you say, a grid with a background image and some text, write it to a bitmap and save it to disk.
Yep.
But the key thing about that is when you're writing a tile is 173 by 173 pixels. And what you don't want to do in a background agent is download a, say, you know, 640 by 480 image,
yep.
Scale it down and then write the tile, because you'll run out of memory with that 640 by 480 tile. Because remember, it's four bytes per pixel. 640 by 480 is a lot of pixels that uses up a lot of memory. So start with an image that's 173 or less. Compose an image that's 173 by 173 or less and write that to disk. Don't bring in large images and scale down.
Yeah, I'm more looking at dynamic data, like the To-Do app and stuff like that. That's a common thing. Well, and a lot of people are surprised that you can actually still use writable bitmap. Mm-hmm.
People want to paint pretty tiles, like our inbox tile with the big number one
exactly.
next
that's
to it.
Exactly, that's the really big...
Yeah. That's the scenario most folks don't know how to do. A few third-party apps have done this, like the Bee's Twitter app does this. But it involves writing that bitmap in a custom way. Today, you do it on the server, because your push application has to be driven from a server app. But tomorrow, in Mango, you can now do this on the phone.
Yeah. And one other thing I'll mention there is that something people trip over when they're trying to do writable bitmap is when an invocation comes into the agent and the agent code starts running, it's not on the UI thread. And of course, people try and create a writable bitmap and immediately throws and says, you know, unauthorized access exception. You need to dispatch onto the UI thread to do all your code. Now, the good news is, if you look at my blog, I had a three-part series on background agents. I actually have a helper library in there that does take a couple of images and some text, composes a back and a front of a tile on the right thread, and writes it out for you.
So, yep.
Wow. If you want to do it, I have some pre-made code.
Yeah. Will I pass certification if I use your code?
It passes the ingestion check, yes.
And again, for context, like, we are assuming that people who are watching this video have read the three-part post. We're not going over rehashing
we'll
the
link
basics.
To it.
So there'll definitely be a link to it. And there's also the Knowledge Changer video, the Knowledge Chamber video that you did with Robert, which we're kind of also saying, hey, if you're just getting used to it and want to see a demo, you know, that's the place to go and find out a little bit about those.
Absolutely.
To continue there, so that's interesting. So, you know, you can do a writable bitmap.
Mm-hmm.
So then the next question is, what are the things that you cannot do from the background agent?
So things that you cannot do. essentially, anything that would interrupt the foreground experience is what you're not allowed to do. Some things are obviously limited by RAM as well. So
can I record what's going on in the environment?
No. So you can't use the microphone, for example, because that would be a violation of the user's privacy.
Yep.
You can't use the camera. It's also a violation of privacy.
Darn.
you can't make sound. So if you show a toast, right, like the SMS toast, that will pop up. That will make sound. If you use our alarms and reminders, that will make sound. But you can't play arbitrary sound effects. You can't play any other audio except through the background audio player. So no making sound effects in the background. You can't use any XNA functionality, because that's typically 3D, which is graphics, which you can't show, or audio, which you can't produce. And that's about it, really. You can't pin tiles. You can update tiles, but you can't pin them. You can't, you know, show UI, we said. You can't launch through our launchers and choosers. You can't launch something into the foreground.
Yep.
It's basically anything that makes sense to run in a small process that's not bound to the UI, you
can do.
That runs
periodically and has a restrained amount of memory.
Yeah, but anything related to UI is off, though. Yeah.
And one thing that's coming up a lot lately is the one thing that we get you is we validate these through static references or through references. So a common thing that we've seen is people calling and saying, my background agent, like, I run it through the test and certification utility, which is really cool, and you should be running your Mango apps through it. And, you know, it failed because I was referencing an XNA library that I'm not using. We're like, yeah, you shouldn't be referencing if you weren't using it. So that is a common kind of gotcha that you have to look at, which is if you have the wrong references, you might fail. Run it through the certification tool first, so that it saves you from submission and all the, over, you know, the waiting those 10 hours till you fail.
Right.
And then
we'll be talking more about certification next week, by the way.
So that's one thing that we do, like we validate through the references.
Yeah, so if you have, say you have an XNA game, so which is obviously using XNA, and you want a background agent to do things like, you know, show you latest score or something like that, make sure that if you have any shared code, it's refactored away from any XNA dependencies.
Yep. So I want to go back just to make sure we are on, like, I want to nail these ones because it's come up a lot and people are asking, and we're seeing it a little bit often with questions now, is the battery status. So if I have, you know, if I'm an AC power and I want to run it, or I need to run a resource intensive task, it will run it when it reaches what, 90?
Above 90%.
Yeah. About 90% of the battery has to be there.
Yes.
The one that's more interesting, or, you know, that gets people a little bit more often, is the generic agents. What happens to them when you're running low on battery? Like, if I'm under 90%, am I still going to run?
Yeah, so the normal periodic agents, they run if the battery is above 20%.
Okay.
So or when the battery saver kicks in. So even if you're at 100% battery, but you go into the control panel and you say battery saver on,
yes,
agents won't run because the user explicitly said, I don't want mail sync in the background. I don't want agents in the background. I don't want anything in the background. But as long as the battery saver isn't on, they'll run until we hit 20%, and then they won't run until the battery is filling again.
Okay. So, like, you know, if you're a developer and you're running an agent and you're logging and you notice that you're not running often, it could be that the user is running on battery saver, which happens to me a lot with my apps because I run all my phones in battery saver mode. So that's kind of a common, like, and I've seen other people ask, like, hey, it's not running, and I have. Because I've given them 20%,
yeah,
and it's like, I have 50% battery, I have 60% battery. So, I mean, the beauty of it is the user is in control,
mm-hmm.
But it's something for, you know, you as a developer to kind of watch out for or plan for.
Yeah. Let me just ask you a quick question, and I don't know the answer to this, so you might not either. But I was told by Thomas Fennell the other day that the Wi-Fi radio doesn't operate at all if the screen is turned off. Is that not the case when you plug in? When you plug in the phone...
If we are doing resource-intensive agents, yes, they will go over Wi-Fi. But generally...
It will fire up the Wi-Fi radio to do that?
Okay. And I can't speak about all the nuances and specifics.
Right.
But in general, yes, once the screen is off, Wi-Fi will tear down after a short period of time.
Right.
Unless it's actively being used.
Because I have heard that powering up Wi-Fi is very battery intense.
But it's actually typically better than cell in terms of actual, you know, power
bandwidth
usage
and performance.
And power usage, too. But the Wi-Fi won't go down if it's being actively used. So, for example, you're playing audio, screen locks, but right, audio is using Wi-Fi, will stay up.
Okay. Yep. So, and that's, since we're talking about networks, that's also relevant when it comes down to agents. Because if you have a resource-intensive agent and you're on a cellular network, we won't use the network, right?
Correct. So we said earlier that they run, you know, plugged in, locked, and on not on a cellular network. And the reason is because unlike periodic agents, which only run for a short period of time and kind of limited in the amount of bandwidth they could consume, and if you're on a limited plan, you don't want to have people using hundreds of megabytes of data, a resource-intensive agent runs essentially for 10 minutes in chunks while the phone is in this idle state.
Yep.
And it can download as much as it wants. And
yep,
you don't want your data plan to be like this big when you only
right,
pay for this much.
Some people pay for... Yeah, have unlimited.
And so if the only network is cellular, the resource-intensive agent won't use it.
So, you know, as a developer, one of the questions that really is popping to my mind as we talk about this is all really great, but how the heck do I debug these things? Because do I have to sit there and wait half an hour for my agent to fire off?
No, that's a good question. Actually, I can show you a demo if you'd like.
Yeah, that'd be fantastic.
So what I have here is... the same Twitter demo that I showed at the Robert Hess show, and I've shown at Mix, and it's on my blog. But what I want to show you is how do I instantly debug? And you see here I have my agent running in the emulator. I'm going to quit it for now and go back to Visual Studio. I won't talk too much about the code because that's all on my blog. But what I want to do is, here's in my tweet agent code. OnInvoke is a method that gets called when...
And you can add this agent just with a simple add object to the...
So let's say I want to add a new agent. I right-click on my solution, say add new project.
Okay. So you add an extra project to the solution.
And you'll see here, here's our normal ones. And then here we have a background playback agent, a streaming agent, or a scheduled task.
Fantastic.
So I add that to my project. What it does is it obviously creates a new project for you. It also goes ahead and updates your app manifest file. So here's my WM app manifest, most people should be familiar with.
What's the background task?
Yeah, my default task, which is the one that runs mainpage.xaml when I run the UI. Now we have these things called extended tasks, with this as it's a background service agent. You know, here's the type that implements it. Here's the assembly that it's in. And here is the type of agent. So it's a scheduled task agent versus an audio playback agent.
Yep.
So that's what the tools do if you want to add an agent to it. So here I am in my tweet agent. Let's say I put a breakpoint here, and I want to know what happens when the agent fires. But I don't want to wait 30 minutes, as you said.
Oh, you had some extraneous keystrokes.
Oh, yes. Someone was trying to keep my screen alive. Let me just delete that. Okay. So we'll run the app. And I could obviously debug the foreground just like I did.
Yep.
But you'll see there's this Run Now button. And what Run Now does, if we go into my foreground, it will actually call a method called launch for test. Let's put a breakpoint here. And this is an API that is used for testing agents. It only works on non-marketplace applications on developer unlocked phones.
I see.
So I can debug my app. Yeah, I can debug my app on my unlocked phone, but if I try and submit this to marketplace, you'll get a failure for calling launch to test in the ingestion tools. But B, even if you somehow manage to call it on a retail phone, it won't work.
Yep.
So you can't have an app that tries to trick the system to run the agent constantly. So let's go ahead and click run now. Obviously, this calls this breakpoint. So launch for test. I give the name of the agent, which is called Twitter, and I say run it in 1 second. So I have time to back out of the app so that I can see my toast. So let's go ahead and run that. Go back to here and then quit my app because I want to see a toast appear. And then in about a second or so, there's a little bit of a fuzz factor. You'll see that it will start to debug the background agent. And here it's telling you actually it uses 3.4 megabytes to do this work. So here we've broken into the agent here. If we look up here in the process, if you've debugged, say, a Silverlight web control with an ASP.NET web service before, or you've debugged, you know, any kind of multi-process debugging in Visual Studio, you're very familiar with this. I can switch to my UI task, and I can debug that. I can switch to my background task, I can debug that. Of course, I can look at the different threads, all this kind of stuff in Visual Studio. And now I can, you know, just F11 through my background agent code, and if there's a bug, I can find it. And if it didn't repro now, I needed to, say, change something in isolated storage, I could do that, hit run agent again, and launch it as many times as I want. So I hit F5, and then the toast pops up, and Chris Rollins has made a tweet.
Wow, and that's really interesting how you're using a tile for debug info.
Yeah, so this is another technique that I blogged about in my post, is that debugging memory usage is hard, because when you attach the debugger, it eats into some of your memory. And so so that 6 megabyte limit we have doesn't apply while you are debugging, because basically you run out of memory straight away.
Right.
So one of the approaches that I had was, why not use, instead of printf, which is what you'd use back in the olden days, why don't I printf onto a tile? So I have this debug tile here, which will flip over in a second, and it will tell me, because of the debugger attached. You see, before we started, it said 3.4 megs.
Yep.
Wow.
With a debugger attached, I took 6.8 megs. But this is a great way of saying how much memory you actually use. And then, of course, I can unpin this if I don't want it. And then when I go back to the app, there'll be an option to add the debug tile again.
Oh.
So it's all in the blog post.
Yep. So that's definitely a common pattern you'll see. Like, first of all, when you're developing your agent, do worry about memory, because on debug, you're never going to hit the issues.
Right.
Monitor your memory and performance. And everybody that I've seen is definitely using some sort of a tile, or a little bit of just a notification thingy where you just popped a message and said, this is how much we consumed.
And does the profiler, the new graphical profiler, help at all in this situation?
Not for the background agent and memory.
Okay.
No,
so with this is actually your utility still, the memory diagnostics helper thingy.
Yeah, so device status dot application peak memory usage is your friend when doing a background agent.
And you have the little wrapper, and that's what we use to just wrap it around. Like, that's what I use, just wrap around memory and then, you know, log it every now and then. And you're looking at peak. So you're just worried about peak because that's, you know, that's what you're after.
Yeah. And actually, anyone migrating from Windows Phone 7 should stop using device extended properties for this and should use the new device status API. So all the memory related APIs that were in Windows Phone 7 under device extended properties and had that capability for device identity, they've all moved to a device status API. So they're strongly typed. There's no capability associated with them. And we added a new one as well, which was application memory usage limit. So in Windows Phone 7, we had these kind of soft, weird rules around how much memory you could use. We said, if the device memory is less than 256, you can only use 90. If it's more than 256, use as much as you want, which is silly because if you have 257 megs of memory, you can't use...
And it doesn't necessarily drive the type of behavior we're looking for either.
Exactly.
Because we don't want people to go insane with memory usage on a mobile device.
Exactly. So now there is a new application memory usage limit property, which tells you how much memory you have. And it works in agents as well, so if I call it from an agent, it'll say 6 megs. If I call it from audio playback, it'll say 15 megs. Yep. And if I call it from a foreground app, it'll say 90 megs on a low memory device, and it'll say some number higher than that on a higher memory device. And that's a hard cap. If you go above that, we will terminate the process.
Yep.
That's a good thing to know about.
Yep. So that's a really good deep dive into agents. I think if we can kind of recap from developer advice, like throw in whatever you see, but a couple that I would see is, first of all, if you're writing an agent, do worry about memory, do worry about CPU, do understand the battery impact that it's going to have on your application, like, you know, whether you're running a resource intensive or a periodic agent, make sure that all of these things are going to play, and we've given you the answers to all of them with how often it runs, how much you get.
I think you also need to make sure that your experience is reasonable, even if the agent can't run. Because there's a lot of situations in which the agent may be terminated or may not be able to run because of user preference. And you want to make sure that the experience is good and that you handle those exceptions appropriately.
Yep. And a very important point that you said that they may be terminated or may not run is that I mentioned a couple of times if an agent is running and the user suddenly starts using the device, we'll actually terminate agents. And so in a foreground application, you get warned, you get a deactivated event or a closing event, and you get 10 seconds or so to clean up. With an agent of any kind, if we need to kill you because the user's suddenly interacting with the phone, we just rip the process. And so when you design an agent, it must be designed such that it can recover from being killed.
Yep.
So some kind of a checkpointing mechanism or a kind of a small transaction-y type system where if you have a log of work to do and you pick things off the log, you know, make sure that you can do the same work twice if you got terminated, and as you do work, you mark it off.
Yep.
But you do need to be aware that you could get killed at any point in time.
Yep, and your application, to go back to your point, Larry, your application should plan for what happens if I don't have an agent, because you know, if the user disables it, you won't run. Your agent won't run, and you cannot be counting on having a cache or any kind of other thing. If your user hasn't launched you in, you know, 14 days, you won't launch. You know, or like you, your agent won't run until you kind of renew your subscription, which is what I call it.
Right.
And that's the last pattern that we looked at, which is, you know, your agent or your foreground app should actually keep registering your agent when it runs. This is okay. Check whether you're enabled or not, so you can kind of come up with the right user experience. But, you know, as long as you try it, you can try to just create a generic agent. And if the user disables you for good, then you'll just get the error there, and you'll be okay. And then log it or do whatever you need.
Yeah. With great power comes great responsibility. And so you need to make sure that you treat your user right.
Yep. And I'll mention one thing. There's on a scheduled task, there's two properties. There's is scheduled and is enabled. Originally, they were going to do different things, but we kind of did a last-minute change in the UI of the system with the way the control panel worked. So essentially, the is enabled doesn't really mean it. It always returns the same thing as is scheduled. So don't worry about enabled versus scheduled.
Yep. Yeah. So I always check is enabled. It feels right, just in case, more forward-looking, in case it ever changes or something like that. That's kind of what we go by. But that's kind of the patterns that we look at.
Yeah.
So, you know, background agents, you can do anything you want. Live Tiles is kind of the most favorite of everybody here, probably. And it's one that we think, you know, really makes those apps better, those Mango apps better. So it's
absolutely
a strong differentiator. But you can go download, do data snacking, download your cache, do whatever you want. There's a lot of flexibility on the agent design with, you know, that still leaves the user in control of their phone and their battery.
Right.
So, Peter, before we close, I do want to say thanks to Yasser. And you
Thank
could
you.
Probably pronounce his last name better than I can.
Yasser Shaban, I believe.
So Yasser is a tester for background agents.
Yes, he's one of the main testers for all our background processing.
And he's been answering all our questions for the last few weeks. So what you had today was literally all the questions that he's seen over the last couple of weeks with people that are doing a lot of background agent development already. So we think that pretty much covers most development questions that we've seen. So thanks to Yasser, who couldn't be here. And thanks, Peter, for joining us.
You're welcome. Thanks for having me.
Yep. Thanks, guys.
See you next time.